Okay, so we'll see if we can get through all of these. Some of them are directed at specific people and some are not. So let's start with...
Give June the hard ones.
Well, I'm going to start with this one that's labeled Hot Topic. All right, and it's not directed to anyone, but it's non-alcoholic beer. Does anybody want to talk about non-alcoholic beer?
About what?
Non-alcoholic beer.
Non-alcoholic beer.
What is it? What's the question?
Do you want to talk?
Can you drink it? Is that the question?
This is all I got is Hot Topic non-alcoholic beer. So I'm creating my own story here. I'm assuming somebody wants to know if non-alcoholic beer is beer. Did I get it? Close enough? What? Does it have alcohol in it?
0.3%.
What, Joe? Yeah. Okay, that one's done.
We just called a friend.
Phone a friend. And just remember, you guys, like, I didn't write these questions. So, let's see.
She had one question before.
Jimmy or Joe, you referenced intimacy in a couple of spots connecting back to how we establish sponsor-sponsee relationships. I find it easier to connect with other alcoholics, harder to do with my family, coworkers, those about me. Can you expand on any suggestions? That's your guys' mic.
Intimate relationships. You know, I said that phrase before. It was a consideration. Do I look at people, you know, in my life through the eyes of a character defect or through the lens of God? And why is it so easy to look at AA people with forgiveness? But then, you know, my wife or my kids or any of that stuff, it's hard to be forgiving, right? So I had to learn how to bring the principles, you know, I mean, this is a process. I had to bring the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous into all my relationships. It's not, you know, I'll use it here for the, you know, the home group tonight and then go home and be, you know, a everyday son of a, you know what, right? So intimate relationships, like any relationships, like the relationships I have with my sponsor, my sponsees, my friends, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my co-worker, well, I don't work, what am I saying? It's something that has to be worked on, right? Just like the relationship I'm trying to form with this power called God, that it's not, you know, I don't drop in on God every, you know, 6 weeks. It's something that, like Joe talked about earlier on, I take the effort, I take the time to work on the relationship, to bring intimacy. I thought intimacy was sex. It's really about trust and affection, looking at people in my life through the eyes of God, compassion, tolerance, patience, forgiveness, realizing something I'd never realized before down on a soul level, right, that people could make mistakes. Sometimes I'm the almighty, you know, I'll point out your mistakes, but let's not talk about mine, right? And I see that in my wife. One of the most important prayers that I do comes out of our sex inventory, and that's to write an ideal, what kind of relationship I want with my wife. And I'm not talking about a sexual relationship, I'm talking about an intimate relationship. You know, so I've taken the time to make sure that I notice and appreciate and let her know the attributes that she shows in our relationship, like her kindness, her politeness, all those kind of things. I make sure that God lets me see that and that I let her know that I appreciate all that kind of stuff. It's work. You know, I can't take that for granted. So that's a long answer for probably a short question. I don't know, Joe.
Thank you for asking that question. I my own personal experience is, you know, I've got five brothers and they don't all talk to one another, but I all talk to them. I talk to all of them, which is really weird. And I think this is what intimacy is. You can't, unless your family is in the program, in a 12-step program, I think it's very difficult for them to be intimate. You know, I can talk to my brothers and it's about the weather and it's about the 401ks and it's about their kids and their grandkids. And, you know, I go, how are you doing? I got to go now. I have things to do, you know, but that intimacy that you were talking about, that we all experience, that it's very unique to the 12-step programs, to a fellowship, and it really is very difficult. I have experienced, and I know other people have experienced it, when I am at a meeting and a dad is given his son, or a son is given his dad, or a mom is given his son, and they're in the 12-step program, I am in tears because of it's not a loss that I have. It's not, it is like, I wish my family had this. That's intimacy, to be able to say, wow, this is the joy that I see you guys having is what I miss. And when you can express that, that's intimacy, because most of us understand that feeling of not having that connectedness with our families. And we probably will never have it, you know, I remember when my mom died, my brother Brian did the eulogy, and he wrote a letter, and he wanted to read the letter, and he sent it to all my brothers, and he said, I just wanted you guys to give a response. And none of my brothers gave a response. I knew what the response I was going to give. I've worked in grief for years. And my brother Brian says, nobody responded. I said, I want to respond, but I want to tell you. And he said, what? I said, you wrote this wonderful eulogy, but at the end, you're going to have to say goodbye, Mom. Oh, he said, Joe, I can't do that. I said, that's exactly what everybody in this church is going to need to hear. And he goes, oh, I can't do that. He says, well, if you want me to read it, I'll do it. He goes, oh, I can't do that. He says, and he read it, and he looked at me when he was coming to the end, and he said, goodbye, Mom. Mm-hmm. And the whole church lost it, because everybody needs to say goodbye. That's intimacy. And to be able to say that to my brother, who is like, has always been Mr. Intimidator, because he was the captain of the everything. And it was like, when he said, oh, I think he got what I've been going through for the past 35 years.
Thank you, guys. Okay, here's a good one. If I drink no matter what, how do I not drink no matter what?
No, I'm not going yet.
Say that again?
If I drink no matter what, how do I not drink no matter what?
I mean, I think every one of us starts a day at a time, an hour at a time. And, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts that we are given here in Alcoholics Anonymous is someone's time. And that's one of the things that I look back on, and I think of how many people gave their time to give me a ride, to let me sit at their house, to let me sit in their office because I couldn't be alone, you know, to open the doors at the AA meetings 2 hours early so that I could go in and have a place to be indoors and have some place to be. And staying sober, getting sober is hard. Otherwise, you know, we were talking about that. Everybody would do it. Staying sober, you know, can be hard. But I believe that, as, you know, so many of us have heard, you know, that Alcoholics Anonymous gives us slowly what alcohol gave us quickly. So when, you know, you look at the promises, that, you know, freedom from, you know, fear of financial insecurity, you know, that's something that we when we drink, we're not worried about our finances, you know, and we don't, you know, we just forget about all the problems of life. But in sobriety, like Jimmy was just talking about, we learn how to stay sober and walk through those experiences, and figure out, you know, like Joe was talking about as well, we figure out some answers, and we see that oftentimes our problems have been of our own making, and someone in Alcoholics Anonymous can share what they did along this path to get better. But it's all about a minute at a time, an hour at a time, and it has to start there. But it has to also continue. You know, like every time I've ever heard Joan share, she talks about, you know, I don't drink no matter what. Now, most of you don't know Joan as well as some of us do. But I guarantee you that Joan has personally walked through some of the most difficult experiences. You could not believe, you know, some of the things that she has walked through in the last 66, I want to give her credit for all the time, 66 and 11 months time. And there are many people sitting right next to you now. Like, we have a home group, the Back Porch International on Zoom. And I started looking one day and I realized we have six members, regular members of that group, who lost a child in sobriety. We had one member who had a brain tumor. We had a couple others that were dealing with cancer. We had, you know, all kinds of problems. If you came to my home group and you signed on Zoom, you could not tell which ones of these people are walking through these difficulties. I'm constantly inspired in Alcoholics Anonymous, regularly, like weekly sometimes, by what people are walking through sober with dignity and a sense of humor. But we do it together, and we do it an hour at a time if that's what it needs to be.
Thank you, Jean. All right, in hearing a fifth step, do you preface it with telling your sponsee not to reveal anything that if the statute of limitations is not expired?
Well, if you want to hold on to that secret about the murder you committed, well, you'll probably get drunk. I want to tell a story about it was the most powerful fifth step I ever listened to. And I'm in northern New Jersey. This is probably 25 years ago. And my sponsor comes up to me, this guy Peter comes up to me and goes, I need you to listen to that guy's fifth step. I'll be down in Texas for the weekend. And I look down the room and it's a Hasidic gentleman, a Hasidic Jewish man who looks very different than me. And I don't mean to be, in any way say that incorrectly. So please forgive me if I did. And I see Peter walk down to that guy and he points at me and he's like, oh no, not him. And so we make an appointment and he comes on Sunday to my house because he can't come Saturday, obviously. And so Sunday's at my house and we're in for a long talk. And I'm telling you, it was like being tied in chains where we were both like, oh, this is tough. And then God came into the middle of that. And all of a sudden, this Jewish man was telling a Catholic boy things that never leave his community, never leave his family, about things that he did that are illegal, about things that, you know, under the statute of limitations. And I mean, this guy put it on the table because somewhere in there, God came in and there was a trust, an intimacy that went on that talk. We were done with the talk after about 7 hours. It was long. And this guy, he didn't have a car. He said, go out on my deck and I'm going to go take a shower, do what it says on the hour, you know, that thing, like bottom 75. And I come downstairs, I'm sitting at my kitchen table and the door opens and this gentleman walks in and there's a light around him. I'm no kidding, a light, a yellow light. And I'm looking at this guy and I'm starting to have a spiritual experience off his fifth step. And I couldn't believe what I was saying. This guy physically, spiritually, emotionally walked into my house a different person because he unburdened himself with the secrets. He talked about things he was going through his grave with. And when he sat down, it was so unbelievable. A couple of years later, I'm speaking at a big group in New York City called the Atlantic Group. It's like an offshoot of the Pacific Group. And I'm walking down the middle of the church aisle, and all of a sudden, someone jumps on my back, and it's the Jewish guy. I'm like, I look like I just committed I just robbed a jewelry store, and this guy's on my back, you know? About 3 months ago, I'm doing a talk somewhere. I'm up like a podium like this, and I see two people shuffling in, a man and a woman. I do the talk, and at the end, this guy comes up to me. He goes, do you remember me? I said, no. He told me his name. I knew immediately who it was. It was that Jewish man who had 2 days back. The light went out. The light went out. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the question. But I just know that if we don't talk about what's going on inside of here, we'll never be free, no matter what it is. And I've heard horrific things in fifth steps. And I think it's because of the trust, the intimacy, that we have with each other, one drunk talking to another, and sharing our experience, sharing the hope that gets us through. So, that's it.
Thanks, Jimmy. Anybody else want to comment on that one? Okay. All right, how about this? Please discuss your current morning practice, prayer and meditation. Please be specific. What do you do? How long?
I think I did it really. I'll just follow up. I get up at 3:30 every day and I pray first, and then I meditate, and then I read. I have in front of my chair, I have 7 different books that I read. I don't read them all. I read one at a time. I'm concentrating right now with a sponsee that I work in the Netherlands. We read Anthony DeMello, The Way to Love. This guy's been going through a lot of emotional stuff, so I said, let's read one of his essays. They're very short, they're about a page long. I said, but we'll read them every day, and we'll at the end of the week, we will talk about what we've read, and then we'll go to the next one. And then I read a Buddhist daily meditation. I read a Marcus Aurelius. I read Thomas Merton. I read Chuck Chamberlain. I read, I can't think of them all, but this is what I do. And then I write that letter. Sometimes the letter will go on and on and on, and other times it's very short, it's very specific, and I do that, and then that's when I stop my day right after that. That is my daily practice, has been for several years now, and it's really just a gift.
Excuse me. So my daily practice is somewhat similar to Joe's. It's not at 3:30 in the morning, though. I have found that for me, I do better with experimentation, in the sense that I started to find out that when I start to say a lot of prayers or things by rote, I tune out. So it's good for me, even though several of the prayers that have been talked about are still very important to me, the St. Francis prayer, you know, different times, but I do better with trying something new. So I also use the Insight Timer that Joe mentioned. And I try like a wide variety, of things. One of the things that's meant the most to me the last 15 years, I mean something like that, has been doing what's called a loving kindness meditation. And those have been extremely helpful. They seem to touch my heart. But I've listened to singing bowls. I've listened to other types of things. Some of them are like nails on a chalkboard for me. Obviously, I'm sure they work for somebody. But they don't, fit for me. Like Joe, I like to read different books a little bit. I don't necessarily read one every single day, but I have a couple of people in AA that send me like a daily email, and I read some different things, and they're all some of those people that Joe was talking about. And I also really like, DeMello has been incredibly important to me. I'll tell you just a really quick DeMello story. So Anthony DeMello is a priest. And about 30 years ago or more, I was at a conference. I was having kind of a hard time. I was sharing with Jimmy's sponsor, Bob Bazans. And Bob said, I'm going to send you some tapes. And I go, okay. And he either sent them or he gave them to me when we next saw each other. And he gave me tapes, like maybe 16 tapes from a priest. And I'm like, I don't do priests, but Bob lives in Minneapolis, so I don't see him that often. Maybe every 3 or 4 years I'd run into Bob, and I'd say, I haven't gotten to those tapes yet. They're in the garage. I didn't tell him that part. I haven't gotten to that yet, and now it's been 8 years or something, and I'm going to see him again, and I think, this is ridiculous. I'm going to listen to one tape so I can say, I tried one of the tapes, Bob, but priests, it's just not right for me, and so then I can give them back to you or mail them back or whatever. And I tried one, and it's been a life-changing thing for me, spiritually, and I've been able to pass it on to a few other people that have gotten something. But we all, hear, different things at different times, I suppose. And that's been really good for me, to be open-minded to trying new types of meditation. So that's kind of...
I write nighttime inventory every night. I haven't missed a day. I don't see it as either statistic. I say this for a point. I haven't missed an evening review since April 9th, 2016. So why I say that is because every morning I review my night from my day before on awakening, right? What do I want to bring into my prayer life? How did I show up yesterday? Was I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, or self-seeking? You know, being specific with some of the behaviors that maybe I wasn't happy with myself before, some of the behaviors that have been pointed out by my sponsor or some of my network of guys, because I'm a big road dog guy, that you have guys that can call you out and you give them that spiritual consent to do that. So I start my day with that kind of prayer. I use a book that comes from a Matt Talbert retreat. I don't know if you have them out here in California, but Matt Talbert, it's not AA, but it's a retreat movement for alcoholics. It's usually led by a priest or someone of the cloth or someone of a religious community that's a recovering alcoholic. So I have some great books that I got on the East Coast that I bring into my daily prayer with that. I make use of a lot of different prayers. And then I go through, I've been reading lately, I started with the new year, was Don Major's Stumbling in the Right Direction. And it was Don's wisdom, just another tool to read, get my day going. Meanwhile, my wife is upstairs and she does her thing too. And then on a daily basis, me and her come together and we do meditation together. And I can't think of a better thing that has been incorporated in my life than meditating with my wife on a daily basis. There's something really special and spiritual and romantic and intimate about doing that together. Because I'm retired, she still works. But when we get done with that meditation, the thought life is placed on a different level than ever before. My home's a home of safety. And it's really important that me and my wife make sure that our home is a safe place. So it's really important that we both do our prayer and our meditation together so that when we are together, we trust each other with our lives. Very important to me, anyway. And again, there's always a million and one books, like our literature tells us, make great use of what's offered, and just... how to pray. There's a million and one books how to pray, like Joe talked about that earlier. So
that's it.
All right. Thank you.
I think everybody could comment on these. They're very close. The questions are very close. So pick which question you want to answer. It's what is the most influential moment in your sobriety, or what is an impactful experience you had with a sponsee?
Stump the drunk.
I can answer both those questions at once. I sponsored a guy. He's my first sponsee. He was a radical atheist, very angry. And so 35 years ago, a lot of people, especially in the San Diego area, were coming into meetings, and the Lord Jesus Christ is my savior. And the veins would pop in his head. Just angry, and he would, it was so uncomfortable to be around him. And I would just say, why don't you just let them be themselves? Father, to God, as you understand, I'm not Lord Jesus Christ, and whatever, relax. So, and this one time, it was a trip, I wanted to go up to Montreal to visit a friend of mine up there, and he wanted to go with me, so we went, and I love going into churches. I just love just going into a church and experience it, and there's a replica of Notre Dame, the Church of Notre Dame in Montreal, and I said, I want to go to the church. He says, well, I'll go with you. I go, oh, God, no, don't do this to me, please, So he went with me, and we went in, and I was smoking at the time, and I quick study, beautiful church, gotta go smoke. So I said, I'm gonna go smoke. He said, can you leave me alone for a minute? I said, sure. And I went out and I smoked, and I'm smoking, and keep on light another one, I'm smoking. It's a half hour later, he's still not coming out, and then he walks out the front door, and there's a glow. There's not a light. There's going what happened? What's going on? He goes, I don't know. I go, what do you mean you don't know? He says, something happened to me in there. I said, what? Like a spiritual, no, not under that. And, but he goes, but there's something happened. I go, what? He goes, I was watching you walk around the church and enjoying what you were experiencing. And then I watched all these other people that were doing the same thing, and I realized that I was denying myself other people's experience by shutting them down. And I went, what? And he said, I don't know what happened, but I realized that I don't have to do what I've been doing to other people ever again, and he never did. And there was like, I was like, wow, this is why we came to Montreal after all. And it was the most profound experience with a sponsee that I could have missed if I had said, no, I don't want you to come in.
Thanks, Joe. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'll try and make mine as fast as possible. I think one of the most profound would be, I was about 3 years sober, and I was dating someone who broke up with me. They actually broke up with me every 30 days, like we never got a chip for staying together. And I'm a person who drank because I could not, I needed alcohol to control my emotions. I mentioned that I suffer from crippling sensitivity. So if I'm drinking, I don't get emotionally hurt because I can shut it down. In sobriety, I really struggle more and more throughout the years with being able to control my emotions sober. And I don't like not controlling my emotions. I'm okay with anger, but no other soft and fuzzy emotions are acceptable. And so this time when this guy broke up with me, I thought, I can't deal with this emotional pain. I can never drink again because I'm an alcoholic. And I know it will get worse, never better. And so I thought, I'm going to kill myself. And that just seemed like the only option. And right then, I'll try and tell it as fast as I can. I got a knock at my door. I went to the door, and there's a guy named Bob. There always is. And the guy says, hey. He said, you remember we're supposed to go on that panel for central office tonight? And I said, oh, no. I said, experience, strength, and hope, I really don't have. I was just going to kill myself. So he goes, well, did you have any dinner? And I said, well, no. He goes, come out. We'll go get some dinner. We'll go to the panel. You don't have to say anything. We'll just go, and then I'll bring you home, and you can kill yourself. And I said, okay. And I went. We got to this city college. We parked. I wasn't talking to him because, you know, if you start to talk to someone, you can begin to feel better. I'm very focused on my pain. And a woman that I've never met before walks up to us and she says, do you know where room B is, or building B? And I go, no. And she said, could you help me find it? I go, fine. We go walking around, and as we're walking, she says to me, she said, I'm taking a business class. I said, fabulous. She said, what kind of class are you taking? I said, well, I'm not really taking a class. I came with some people, we're, you know, on a panel. We're going to talk a little bit about alcoholism. She said, really, for it or against it? I don't know. I guess you'd say against it. I mean, I don't know, you know. And she said, well, I'm on the wagon. She said, I've got, you know, like 2 days. And I said, you know, I've known a lot of people on the wagon. A lot of them fall off. She said, well, why would you give that kind of a talk? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Would you like to go to a meeting one day? And she said, yes. And we traded phone numbers. And we met the next day. And I couldn't go home and kill myself because she'd think AA didn't work. So I took her to a bunch of meetings. She didn't get sober right then. But as of right now, she's got 49 continuous years of sobriety. That's Kay. And Kay has every bit as much to do with the fact that I've got 51 as that she has 49. And I got that message at a whole deeper level about when all else fails, try working with another alcoholic.
All right.
What was the question?
What's your...
What has Roger done? Nothing. That's why I traded him to Joe. No, I mean, I talked about those stories, the biker, the cop, I mean, you know, the experience with my mother was unbelievable. But I think one experience I didn't go maybe a little deeper into was when my dad died and I found him and told you about that. But when it was all said and done, 18 months sober, I don't know, man. Maybe I overreacted. Maybe this thing, I don't know. You know, I'm staying sober. I like you guys. You tell funny stories. Joe's funny. But, you know, June's funny. I like that aspect of it. But, man, I was so shut down as a human being. I was so afraid to talk about me. I was so ashamed of my behavior and the trauma of living on the streets. It almost killed me. I mean, it was just all of that, like in a, it was like encased in a bowling ball. It wasn't coming out. But when my dad died, at the end of it all, I'll never forget my mother coming up to me. And she said, Jimmy, if it wasn't your faith, I would never have gotten through your father passing away. And all I could think about was, I didn't do nothing but bring alcoholics home to her, Alcoholics Anonymous home to her. I didn't have any answers. I didn't have anything. I would go to a meeting, see guys like June and Joe, and tell them what's going on. They would share some things with me. I was like a parrot. I just brought it home. I just brought it home. I just brought it home. And, you know, I always compared myself to my brothers and sisters. They're all four of them are very successful. And, you know, I used to just beat myself up that I'm the black sheep of the family and I've been arrested and blah, blah, blah. And, but that was a really turning point in my sobriety that I think I could do this. I really believe I could do this. And, you know, you don't know that until you look back and see it. Like that old line, you know, we live life forward, but we understand it backwards. Looking back, God put me right in where I was supposed to be in that moment. So that's all I got.
All right. I got a story. Can I answer the question too?
Sure.
Stop the drunk.
I don't know. Joe's looking at me not good, so I won't. All right, next question.
You were judging.
Okay, I have a story. It's gonna sound like it's not spiritual, but it is, you guys. So when I was like 17 years sober, 15, 16, 17 years sober, I was sponsoring all these women in AA. And I had been single for like almost 10 years. And when I say single, I mean single, okay? Got me? Understand what I'm saying? Okay, so my ex-husband, my first ex-husband who had just gotten out of prison, calls me. And he says, I'm coming to see you. My daughter's in jail in Mexico, and I'm leaving L.A. right now, and I'm coming to see you tonight. And I was like, oh, okay. And because I'd been talking to him since he got out of prison, and I came to AA when we first got married because he was in trouble with alcohol, and I'm the one that got sober. So I'm living this delusion that he's going to get sober. It's going to be a great AA story. You know, he's going to get sober. I'm going to stay sober in AA, and we're going to get to tell this story. So I already knew I wanted to see him. So he says, I'm coming to see you. Now, what that translated to me was, can I say it?
You're going to have sex.
Yeah, I was going to sleep with him that night because it had been like 10 years, okay? I was like, I'm going to sleep with this guy for sure. And I was like, I can't do that. I'm an example in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor all these women. What am I going to do if I do this? So I couldn't call my sponsor because she was in Ohio. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning in Ohio. I was like, I can't call her. So I called my best friend in AA, and I told her, I said, you got to call me back. My ex-husband just called me. I know what's going to happen if he comes to see me tonight. I have to call me. You have to call me back. So I hung up from her, and then I called my sober sister, and I told her the same thing. I said, I got the voicemails. So I left another voicemail. You have to call me back. And then I called Shirley, and she didn't answer the phone either. So I left her a more proper voicemail, and nobody called me back. So I got on my knees, and I did a version of the third step prayer. I said, God, you know what I want in this situation. If you're okay with that, I'm okay with that. But if you're not okay with that, I'm going to need you to do for me what I don't even want to do for myself right now. And what ended up happening is he called me about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was asleep. And I answered the phone, and he goes, are you asleep? And I said, yes. He goes, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. I said, okay, bye. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but if you'd have known me, not sober, but before then, you know, I'd have been like, oh, it's fine, come on over. The fact that I said, okay, bye, and hung up the phone is a direct result of saying prayers and reaching out for help. Okay, I really thought that would go better than what it did. But anyway, okay, how about one more question and then we'll pack it in. Let's see. All right, here's one. How do you motivate sponsees to move through 8 and 9 when they are still playing the victim?
Next question.
Okay. I heard if you're having trouble with a step, you might need to rework the previous step. Agree or disagree? Another one? You want me to just keep going?
No. We'll figure something out. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Jim's got to answer.
What was the question again?
You want me to read it again? I heard if you're having trouble with a step, you might need to rework the previous step, agree or disagree.
Well, everything you hear is not true, so I don't know about that statement. I mean, is that like AA folklore or something, where if you screwed up, you take a 2 steps back? Well, not in the arm twisting business, I know that. And if you're not willing to work the steps as outlined in the book, and if you're asking me to help you take you through that process, and you start to balk, well, if you read the page of 96, you know, there's, sometimes we got to get out of the way of their bottle. That doesn't mean we shoot our wounded, but sometimes I just got to get out of the way of their bottle. If you're not willing to do what I asked you to do or what I even did, then how can I, you know, what are we going to do, write another 4th step to find out the same thing you know already? Right? So willingness is sometimes a tough thing to put into someone. And like I said earlier, that's an inside job. And if you're not willing to work the steps, not willing to make the amends, not willing to write inventory, not willing to start a prayer life and a meditation life, not even willing to put a dollar in a basket, I might not be your guy. It's that simple.
It's funny because I think even the question that we passed on is very similar, and I think it's both. It's really about intimacy again. It's coming back to really, you know, if somebody's saying I'm having trouble, and I have to say, well, what is the trouble? What is it that, and I might have to really pull it out of them. What is it? Is it something? For me, it was like the reading thing was a really big thing. I was so afraid to tell somebody that I had a really difficult time reading and writing, and I don't know what to do about it. And I think the fear was being blocked by my pride. Again, we go back to this pride thing. And I think so, especially with, do you have to go back to the other step? I think... For me, it's been like, well, what is it that's blocking you from getting moving forward? It's not about going back again. It's about moving forward. And I think usually when they're stopped or blocked from doing the steps, it's not because of what is they've already revealed. It's what they're afraid to talk about that's coming down the road. And it's that they're not in the moment. They're thinking, or they're trying to justify, or they're trying to. It's kind of like editing your story. Don't edit the story. Just let it out. And Jimmy just mentioned the word trust. It has to do with the trust. And if the trust is broken, and it does get broken, sometimes the sponsor has to say, I don't know if we're on the same wavelength. You know, I don't know if you want to really move forward. You have to let me know. You know, I'm going to ask you to do some things that you might not want to do. Are you willing to do that? Probably not. And it's like, it has to be, you know, like, I'll never forget when my first sponsor broke up with me, I was just devastated, you know, and I remember going to the second man that I asked to sponsor him, and thank God I was wanting to justify my anger, and he just said, Joe, I know that God puts your sponsor in your life, and he also takes your sponsor out of your life. Your job is to tune into when that's happening, and both the people have to do it. So it really is, it's kind of like I don't possess any of my sponsees. I always say, if you want to move on, please. You know, but it's like, but you got to tell me, you don't blame me. And I think every one of us has probably had people that we worked with ad infinitum, and they walked out of our lives and we never knew why. Mm-hmm. If somebody is like, they're coming to me and say, hey, I have a sponsor now, but I want you to sponsor me. The first thing I say to them, what I want you to do is go to that person and say, listen, I'm going to move on to another person. I want to thank you for everything you've done for me. Because that is just like what I told you about with my brother saying, you have to say goodbye to mom. You have to close the door. Because somebody will always go, I wonder what I did wrong. We don't do anything wrong. All we're trying to do is be of maximum service to help somebody, give it away to somebody else. And if anything I do in the sponsor relationship, I go, you know, it's your life. I am here to... I am not the power. I'm guiding you towards the power. What is your sponsor? The big book is not it's the menu, not the meal. You know, I am just the hole in the flute. Hafez, I think I keep that. I am just the hole in the flute. And if I think I'm anything other than that, my ego is in the way. Are we done? Thank you.
I was going to, there was one more question for June, so I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Is it ever too late to make an amends?
What?
Is it an amends?
Oh, an amends.
You know, I don't think it is ever too late to make an amends. I mean, the purpose of the amends process is for us to get free. And so I think there's different ways to make amends in different circumstances. But again, Chuck Chamberlain used to always say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. One of the most common prayers that I have done over the years is I've asked to be willing, to be a willing student, so that I can find my teacher when I'm stuck with something. And I've always found people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have been willing to share the experience that they have had that can help. And as a sponsor, I frequently direct the people I sponsor to other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, to someone who I know has had an experience with this or an experience with that, because I do believe that our greatest gift is to be able to share our experience, not just in theory, but, you know, like what people have done. So, you know, of course, we all know people who have made those amends, you know, at gravesides. You know, there are people, you know, that have, you know, I talked about making amends to people. I don't know how to get in touch with them. I don't know their names. I don't know anything about them, but I've tried to make amends, you know, in the universe. And so I think that there are always ways that we can pay it forward and pay back and try to make, you know, whatever the world or the situation or our community better than it was from the damage that we did.
All right, thank you. Okay, unless there's a burning desire, I think we're going to go ahead and close. Are you guys good? All right, let's thank them again, you guys.